This past February 23rd marked the 45th anniversary of the infamous coup d'etat attempt in the Spanish Parliament when a section of Spain's armed forces tried to overthrow the government in 1981 in a desperate attempt, basically by pro-Francoist supporters, to reverse the democratic reforms, to reverse progress, to push the clock back to an earlier, darker period in Spanish history, just at a time when this country had become a sort of resounding success story in just how to transition from a dictatorship into a constitutional monarchy where people, God forbid, could choose their own political leaders. It was a shock back then, and it's still a shock to this day. After all, this was the very same year, as I say, 1981. Raiders of the Lost Ark came out in the theaters, and you had video games like Donkey Kong being launched, and at VHS, the videos were becoming popular, MTV was becoming popular, so it really wasn't that long ago. And there was a world out there that was on a very different wavelength, where you didn't have military commanders devising ways to take over a democratic government. But I was going to add that if you were Spanish or passionate about Spanish history the way I am, this kind of illegal interruptions was nothing new in Spanish politics. In fact, having the military intervene was practically part of the rules for a very long time. I mean, we're talking about, by now, 2026, going back 200 years. This was just the latest in a very long history of coups or coup attempts. And it was my original plan to talk about that history when a couple of other related items sort of jumped to the news headlines here. So I will deal with them first and hopefully get back to my original idea soon, but at another time, at a different time. Excuse sort of my stuffed up nasally voice. It's raining again, but the allergies have been terrible because of the previous rain and all this plant called the Arizonica or Arizonica. It's all over the city, and I am particularly susceptible to its pollen. And so that explains that. Anyway, before we get to this, these two things I was going to talk about, let me just give you a little background, a reminder of what happened on that day. Some people know about this, others may be new to this thing. This was a time when members of Spain's paramilitary group, known as the Guardia Civil or the Civil Guard, was led by Lieutenant Colonel Antonio Tejero, and they burst into Parliament in the middle of a vote, or at least a debate. They were voting to decide who would be the next prime minister, because Adolfo Suarez, who had been the prime minister up to then, had resigned, so they were going to vote a new one in, and it was most likely going to be a man named, in fact, it ended up being a man named Leopoldo Calvo Sotelo. Anyway, so this was live on TV as these soldiers, these military personnel came into the Parliament House. And this would be the equivalent of the House of Representatives in the United States or the House of Commons in the UK. And gunshots were fired. Everyone hit the deck except for three people. I'll tell you about that at a different time. And the announcement was made that suggested a new government was going to take over. To make a very long story short, tanks started rolling out into the streets of Valencia as that military unit from that part of Spain joined the rebellion. But for the most part, the military, the different divisions and units stayed in their places. the most important being a 13,000 strong, 13,000 troops strong armored tank division just outside of Madrid in a place called Brunete. And there was worried that they would try to take Madrid, but that didn't happen, thank God. Confusion reigned, but the coup did not cohere, probably in part because there was sort of some confusion about what to do there. There were several visions on what should be done. Some favored a full-blown takeover by the military, while others advocated a soft coup where democratically elected party members formed a government with members of the military who would keep a watchful eye on how things were going. Anyway, neither idea came into fruition. And finally, the king, Juan Carlos I, came on TV at 1 in the morning in his military uniform and declared his loyalty to the Constitution and ordered the coup plotters to stand down. The next morning, they gave up. It marked the last serious attempt to turn back the clock and confirmed a brighter future for democracy in Spain. But anyway, so that's that. Now, what has come up in the last week or two that is newsworthy? Well, the first is that there was the release of what they call the 23F, which is basically February 23rd. It's sort of the equivalent of 9/11. The 23F files, or the classified documents surrounding the events of that fateful February 23rd, 1981. Around 155 documents were released, including reports, records, plans, communications transcripts. Anyway, historians and political interests sought to clarify. Now, one of the hopes from this release of documents for historians and people who were interested in that topic and that subject, they hope to clarify some of the mysteries and possible controversies surrounding the events. But little has come of them, since most experts knew about most of the details that have been revealed, and the documents have shed little light. But a few things did come out that got some attention, because basically people didn't know about them. One was that at least six intelligence agents were aware of the plot and apparently were in favor of taking action against the government. So that was new. And then more details came out that seemed to strengthen the belief that the king, King Juan Carlos I, was all for defending democracy. Traditionally, rumors out there had suggested that he might have been one of those who silently supported it, but shied away when it turned out that the coup was going to fail. But it was revealed here that the more hardcore plotters actually viewed the king as an obstacle, someone who was preventing the return of fascism. And that would make sense, since Juan Carlos had been one of the biggest proponents of democracy almost from the very beginning. We must recall that he was head of state, and nearly from the beginning, he was in charge of helping to form a government and assist in any way he could. It turned out he really had his mind set on changing the form of government in Spain, and had a lot to do with that and the success of that happening. We also learned from the royal communications that the king had refused one of the coup leaders, considered to be one of the masterminds, if not the mastermind behind this, a former advisor to the king named Alfonso Armada. Armada wanted to go into the palace, the royal palace, but King Juan Carlos refused that. He denied him. And this was certainly a clear sign that he was against the uprising. In a way, Juan Carlos who has been through some pretty rough times over the past 15 years. He is currently in a kind of self-imposed exile outside of Spain. His reputation has been somewhat restored, at least by some, mainly his biggest supporters. And then finally, we discovered that the authorities looked into the option of actually assaulting the parliament that night, the night of the 23rd. They were going to go into the building and try to take it by force. They had even calculated that the action might result in the death of 80 to 110 people. In hindsight, the decision not to take action in that way was certainly a wiser one, a more sensible one, since the coup plotters gave up the very next day and not a single life was lost. Anyway, that's some of the stuff that you can see. If you're interested and if you're pretty good at Spanish, you can check them out on the Prime Minister's website. It's Moncloa, M-O-N-C-L-O-A, and you can access them there. And I was a little surprised by the relatively small size of the files being released, only 155. Maybe I'm have been affected by the Epstein files, which are into the millions, or seemingly so. And this was just 155 files, hundreds of pages, but not many overall. I expected something much more massive given the serious nature of the event. Apparently, there are some documents that still haven't been revealed, and some say there are other documents that were probably destroyed years ago. But that wasn't the only thing that happened that day. Anyway, that wasn't the only thing that happened that day. On February 25th, that very same day, February 25th, Antonio Tejero, the man most people associate with this coup, since he was the man who led the storming of the parliament, the Congreso de Diputados, he died at his home in the province of Valencia at the ripe old age of 93, which many saw to be a timely moment for him to depart this world. Others saw it as ironic. Some were sad to hear that news, and many were rather happy to hear that news. Tejero was a highly controversial figure throughout his life, as you can imagine. He was born in Malaga in 1932, sort of early enough to probably recall a little bit, at least vaguely, some aspects of the Spanish Civil War. He would have been, let's take a look at the numbers here, he would have been 7 when the war was over, and also the post-war period, so he would have had some memories that go back then. He enlisted in the, or joined the Guardia Civil, the Civil Guard, in 1952, or 51 actually, I believe. And by the late 70s had risen to the rank of lieutenant colonel. He was unapologetic about his admiration of Franco. He clearly viewed this transition period from a dictatorship or a fascist dictatorship to a democracy as a big mistake, as well as a betrayal of the caudillo's wishes. His hardline conservative views were well known, and he had already been arrested in 1978 for trying to plot against the government in a conspiracy known as Operation Galaxia, which was named after a coffee shop, a cafeteria, where much of the planning took place. He was even sent to jail for 7 months as a result. But once out, far from repenting for his actions, he went back to the drawing board and coordinated with others to try again. The result was the 1981 coup attempt. This time, the rule of law came down harder on him, and he was sentenced to 30 years in prison for military rebellion against constitutional order. He was stripped of his military honors and expelled from the Guardia Civil, which makes sense if you think about it. He got out on parole in 1996 and started a somewhat quieter life, though he remained active in sort of the fringe political scene of the far right. And he would appear at meetings or rallies here and there from time to time. But he was getting older and developed a sort of quirky and unexpected hobby called painting. A number of his works have been sold, and you can even find examples of them online. I was taking a look at some of them. You can sort of see the influence in certain cases of someone like Salvador Dali in his work. But anyway, he died on February 25th, as I was mentioning, that very same day. And he left this world still unrepentant for what he had done. He never said sorry. He never walked back. And he never apologized. As he saw it, he was doing what he thought he had to do to save Spain. So, well, you know, for better or for worse, you have to admit he stuck to his beliefs until the very end. And with him, one of the last main figures of this sort of harrowing episode in Spanish history, and possibly, as far as I know, the last from the side of the plotters, at least the main figures there, and that has put an end to that chapter, at least in that sense. So that's the end of that, and I'll be back soon, or on another occasion, let me give myself a little leeway there, to tell you about the history of coups in Spain. It's long and lengthy, as I like to say. And that'll be all for our podcast brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. And you can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. You can also check us out on our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.